Welcome back to the UAP Research Deep Dive with UAP Caucus.
Good to be back.
Today you've brought us a really intriguing piece of work, a research paper titled Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, UAP, Orb and Rod Object Orientation and Energy Coupling by Dr. Andrew Morgan and Dr. Brian Tyson, published November 2024. What stood out to you about this one?
Well, what really grabbed my attention, and I think yours too, is its commitment to a scientific approach, you know? We often get these fascinating stories, these accounts in the UAP world, but this paper, it really tries to move beyond that, applying rigorous methods to actually observing specific phenomena.
Exactly. And that's what we love to see. While the personal stories, they definitely spark curiosity, this research gives us a look at a particular location and a recurring phenomenon, these orb and rod-shaped UAP, where was it? Karajini National Park.
That's right, Western Australia. And they're looking at how researchers are trying to understand them using, you know, actual data, systematic observation.
Right. So our goal today is really to unpack their methodology, their findings, make it clear and insightful for everyone listening.
And, you know, right away, it's important to clarify what we're not talking about here.
Good point.
This isn't about, like, classic flying saucer reports. Dr. Morgan and Dr. Tyson, they focused very specifically on these orbs and rods, observed over 2 years just in this one location.
And the fact they keep showing up there, recurring, that makes it really interesting for a scientific study, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It suggests something might be location specific.
And to study these, the researchers, they weren't just relying on, you know, somebody seeing something.
No, no. They brought in tech. They used infrared digital binoculars.
Ah, the IR.
Exactly. And EMF detectors, too, to gather actual tangible data on these objects.
Like what they looked like, how they moved.
How they were oriented, yeah. And even the electromagnetic environment right there around them.
Okay, so let's dive in then. Starting with these orbs and rods themselves, what makes them distinct? What are we actually talking about here?
Well, what's fascinating is how the paper immediately tries to sort of place these phenomena, you know, in context, both with conventional UAP reports and known atmospheric stuff.
Okay.
They distinguish them from the typical craft sighting, sure, but they also note similarities to things like lightning balls and earth lights.
Really? Like, what similarity?
They point out some shared characteristics, like a potential plasma-like nature think, highly energetic state of matter.
Okay, plasma.
Possible links to magnetic disturbances in the area, anomalies showing up on night vision, even when you can't see anything.
Right, the MVGs see things we don't.
Exactly. And also a certain plasticity, like they can change form a bit.
So they're saying, okay, they share some traits with known things, but maybe they're not quite the same. Is that the idea?
That seems to be it. Acknowledging overlap, but suggesting these orbs and rods might be something different. And this research, it actually builds on some of their earlier work.
Yeah.
Same location.
Ah, okay. So this isn't the first paper from them on this site.
No, they refer back to one from earlier in 2024. That first study, it focused more on just describing the shapes, the orbs, the rods, and how often they were seen there in Karajini.
So laying the groundwork.
Pretty much. Establishing that these things were consistently present, which then allowed them to dig deeper in this paper, looking at orientation and potential energy interactions.
Got it. And they specifically used the 850 nanometer infrared spectrum.
Yeah.
Why that particular wavelength?
Think of it like tuning into a specific channel. Like on a night vision camera, maybe one channel is really good at picking up certain heat signatures or energy emissions that our eyes just miss completely.
Okay.
So 850 millimeter, it lets them potentially see aspects of these objects, maybe related to their energy that wouldn't show up otherwise. It's a targeted tool for this kind of observation.
Makes sense. A specific tool for a specific job. Okay, so we have these unusual orbs and rods seen repeatedly in one place using this targeted IR tech.
Yeah.
Now, how did they actually study them scientifically? You said the paper really emphasizes the methodology.
Yes, and this is, I think, a really key aspect. It's what makes this paper stand out. The authors, they explicitly contrast their approach, this structured data collection, with a lot of historical UAP observations.
Which have often been criticized, right, for being anecdotal, less systematic.
Exactly. They even reference some older studies to highlight that historical gap in, you know, rigorous methodology. They're trying to do better.
So what did their better approach actually look like on the ground in Karajini?
Well, they set up a really structured sampling technique, trying to minimize bias, gather consistent data. They used tripod-mounted IR binoculars.
For stability.
Yeah, exactly. No shaky cam. And they used a magnetic compass to know precisely which way they were pointing. Then every 10 minutes, they'd film for 1 minute facing each cardinal direction, north, east, south, west.
1 minute each direction every 10 minutes.
Right. So that gave them, what, 6 1-minute video samples every hour, a consistent stream of visual data.
That sounds way more systematic than just, you know, pointing a camera wherever something catches your eye.
Oh.
And they weren't just filming, right? You mentioned the EMF readings.
Correct. Right after each 1 minute filming bit, they'd whip out an EMF detector, a specific model, the JD3001, and measure both electric and magnetic field intensity nearby.
How long do they measure for?
6 30-second readings right after each filming sequence. So they have this parallel data collection. They can look for links between what they're seeing in the IR and what the electromagnetic environment is doing.
Okay, that's clever. Collecting both at the same time intervals. And they did this over several different field trips. Does the methods change at all?
Yeah, multiple trips over 2 years. And interestingly, they did adapt things slightly, depending on the trip's goals or the specific spot. Like one trip, trip two, they took samples every 200 meters along a walking track.
Okay, mobile sampling.
Right. Other trips, trips 3 and 5, they stayed put at one fixed spot near the campground. And crucially, they also did a trip, trip 4, about 30 kilometers away.
Ah. To see if it was just happening at that one spot.
Exactly. To check if this was really a localized thing or more widespread.
That makes a lot of sense. Good scientific control. Okay, so they're gathering all this video, all this EMF data, very systematically. How did they analyze it to figure out the orientation? And what's this anomaly they talk about?
Right, the analysis part. This is where it gets really interesting. For the rod-shaped objects, they'd watch the video, see if a rod moved left or right across the screen. Then, since they knew which direction they were filming, north, east, whatever, they could translate that left-right movement into a general direction of travel for the rod relative to them.
Ah, so converting screen movement to a real-world direction.
Basically, yeah. Was it heading generally east, west, etc.? They plotted all this data on Compass Rose radar plots for each trip so you could visually see if there were preferred directions.
A visual map of rod movement?
Huh.
Cool. And this anomaly, it was like a haze, but only in the infrared. Exactly that. Just this hazy area showing up in the 850-millimeter images. And what was really weird was that within this haze, they saw these semi-transparent orb thing.
Semi-transparent.
Yeah, like you could almost see through them, and they seemed to drift along with the haze. They called this phenomenon ghosting.
Ghosting, okay.
The paper uses an analogy like comparing the haze to a mid-ocean current, and these orbs are just being carried along inside it.
But you couldn't see this haze with your eyes or feel wind or anything.
Nope. They specifically note it wasn't visible to the naked eye, and there was no obvious weather explanation, no wind, fog, mist, temperature inversions that matched up. Something specific to the IR signature there.
Wow. Okay. So how did the rods relate to this anomaly? Were they moving with it too?
Well, their analysis of the rod orientations, it showed significant differences between trips. They think things like their line of sight, the terrain, probably influenced where they saw the rods most often.
Like hills blocking the view.
Could be. For instance, one trip, the view north and east was clearer because of a slope. And yeah, they saw more rods moving generally that way. Overall, though, they tended to see more rods moving across their view perpendicular rather than straight towards or away from them.
Okay, so the local geography played a role in seeing the rods. What about those ghosting orbs inside the haze? Was their movement just random, or did it relate to the haze?
Definitely not random. They found a statistically significant difference in the ratio of these ghosting orbs moving towards versus away from specific cardinal directions on each trip.
Meaning
it strongly suggests their orientation was linked to the haze itself. The direction these ghosting orbs moved seemed to be generally parallel with how this hazy anomaly appeared to be flowing.
So the orbs inside the haze seemed embedded, moving with it. But what about the other orbs and rods? The ones they called manifested, the ones not ghosting.
Ah, yes. That's a really crucial distinction they make. These manifested ones, the ones that appeared more distinctly, not seemingly in the haze, they did not appear to be moving directly towards or away from the anomaly.
Oh. So how did they relate to it?
The evidence, according to the paper, suggested they were orientating themselves around it.
Around it. Not towards it, not away from it, but around it.
Exactly. It's like there's this central thing, this anomaly, invisible to our eyes, and these more solid-looking objects seem to be positioning themselves relative to it.
That's subtle, but really important. Not attraction or repulsion, but a spatial relationship. Mm. Okay, let's switch gears then to the other big piece. energy coupling, the electromagnetic link.
Mm-hmm.
What did those EMF readings show?
So they gathered a lot of data, electric and magnetic field intensity, across the trips. The data is in a table in the paper. It showed some variations, like between day and night sometimes.
Any issues with the equipment? Field research can be tricky.
They did mention one. On trip three, they lost signal at night, suspected a calibration problem with the EMF detector. And they also note a possible recalibration after that might have affected the absolute levels on later trips. So, you know, real world challenges.
Absolutely. Happens all the time. But despite those challenges, did they find any actual connections between the EMF readings they did get and the orbs and rods?
Yes, they did. And this is quite interesting. Their analysis found a statistical correlation.
Okay.
Between the measured strength of both the electric and magnetic fields at the site and the average number of both rods and manifested orbs they observed.
What kind of correlation? Strong, weak?
Moderate positive correlations. The R values, which measure that link, were around 0.66 and 0.61 for rods.
Okay.
And 0.71 and 0.76 for the orbs. So statistically significant.
Right. And correlation doesn't equal causation. We always have to say that.
True.
But what does a correlation like that suggest here? A potential relationship.
Precisely. It doesn't prove cause and effect, no. But it does strongly suggest a potential link between the electromagnetic environment there, tied to this anomaly perhaps, and the presence or activity of these UAP.
It hints that maybe these objects are interacting with or are influenced by the EM fields.
That seems to be the implication, yeah. Or perhaps their presence affects the fields. It suggests some kind of energy coupling is happening.
That is suggestive.
Hmm.
And to give us some context for these readings, how strong were these fields, like compared to everyday stuff?
Yeah, they did that comparison, which is helpful. They included a table showing typical levels in houses near power lines.
What did they find?
They found the electromagnetic field intensities they measured within this anomaly area in Kirigini were comparable to being relatively close to high voltage power lines.
Wow.
Or maybe being inside a house with various appliances running.
So definitely elevated compared to what you'd expect in a remote national park, miles from power lines usually.
Right. It helps put those numbers into perspective. It's a noticeably active electromagnetic environment.
Okay. Now, the paper also throws in something else quite unusual, a totally separate observation, a different kind of object, not an orb or rod.
Yeah, this was distinct and quite intriguing. Unlike the orbs and rods, which needed that specific IR camera, this other object, it was actually visible to the naked eye.
Visible. Okay. What did they see?
They observed a specific pattern of flashes. It started bright, then went dull, then had this luminous flash that actually lit up the object itself for a moment.
And when it lit up, what did it look like?
They analyzed frame captures, enhanced the images, and described it as spherical, but covered in these round dimples.
Dimples.
Yeah, their analogy was like the surface of a golf ball.
A giant golf ball in the sky. That's different. And how did it move?
Slowly, deliberately, they said, across the night sky. And it would appear, do its flash sequence, then disappear for a few minutes.
But then come back.
And then reappear, yeah, in a slightly different spot, repeating the process.
Very different behavior from the orbs and rods just moving around.
Hmm.
Why include this totally separate sighting in a paper about the orbs and rods?
Well, they seem to include it to highlight that maybe there's more than one type of unconventional thing happening out there in Kirigini.
Oh, okay.
By contrasting its unique features, naked eye visibility, slow movement, that weird structure with the infrared-only orbs and rods, they're suggesting, you know, maybe we're dealing with multiple phenomena.
Different types of UAP in the same area.
Potentially. They even speculate, and they admitted speculation.
Sure.
That maybe this larger structured object could be some kind of probe.
Yeah.
Possibly monitoring the anomaly that the orbs and rods seem tied to.
A probe monitoring the anomaly. Okay, that adds a whole other layer, doesn't it?
Definitely adds complexity, yeah. It's an idea they float.
Okay, so let's try and bring the main threads back together, focusing on the orbs and rods and this anomaly. What are the absolute key takeaways from their research?
Well, the primary findings seem to be, first, that these orb and rod UAP show a clear relationship with this location-centric anomaly, the one visible in infrared.
But not necessarily moving to it or from it.
Right, more like orientating themselves in relation to it or around it.
Yeah.
And second, that statistically significant correlation they found.
Between the EM fields and the object counts. Exactly. That strongly suggests some form of energy coupling or interaction is happening between the objects and this anomaly.
And the paper touches on what these things might be, physically. plasma-like. What does that really mean here?
Yeah, they discussed the possibility they could be related to something called nucleated plasma.
All right.
Think of it like highly energized gas held together by EM forces, almost like self-contained balls of energy.
Okay.
They suggest this anomaly might be a place where the atmosphere is getting ionized, creating the energetic conditions for these plasma things to exist, or maybe even harness energy.
And how does that compare to things we know, like ball lightning?
Well, they do compare them to Earth lights, ball lightning.
Mm.
There are some superficial similarities, but they point out differences too, like the stable luminosity they saw in the IR, the fact they didn't seem to pulsate or break apart like ball lightning often does, suggests the orbs and rods are likely distinct phenomena.
So similar physics maybe, but different behavior, different characteristics.
That seems to be the line of thinking.
And the researchers themselves, they're saying this is just step one, right? More research needed.
Oh, absolutely. They really stress the need for future work using like a broader range of sensors, multi-wavelength, multi-mode.
Team more.
Yeah, to get a more complete picture of how the anomaly and the objects change over time across different energy spectrums. And they also highlight needing redundant sensors.
To double check findings.
Yeah.
And avoid issues like that calibration problem.
Exactly. Data confirmation is key. And importantly, while the paper doesn't give definitive answers on what these things are, natural, man-made, non-human, whatever, it clearly states the goal is just to keep investigating, using rigorous science, not jumping to conclusions.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you, our listener, the curious learner? I would think this research is just a fantastic example of how scientists can apply systematic, data-driven methods to study these really unconventional phenomena.
Yeah, it moves us beyond just stories, fascinating as they are, and gets into measurable stuff, object orientation, EMF fluctuations, trying to understand the underlying nature of these UAP.
And this idea of a location-centric anomaly that these orbs and rods interact with, maybe even draw energy from, that's pretty profound, isn't it?
It really is. It raises huge questions. Is this just some natural phenomenon we haven't cataloged yet? Entirely possible. Or could it hint at something? Well, more unexpected.
The comparisons to Earth lights and ball lightning help kind of ground it a bit.
Right. They help narrow possibilities. But the unique features they observed here, the combination of things, it does suggest something more complex might be going on.
And that separate sighting, the weird golf ball thing.
Yeah. That just adds another layer of intrigue. Are we looking at one phenomenon or maybe a whole collection of related or even unrelated events happening in the same place?
It really underscores the need for more science, doesn't it?
Mm.
Better data, more sensors, continued inquiry.
Absolutely. It highlights the need for sophisticated, comprehensive data collection. And frankly, the potential for some genuinely surprising discoveries as we keep looking with these rigorous methods.
It's a great reminder that there's still so much we don't know, right? About our own planet, the skies. And that systematic observation, careful analysis, that's how we unlock these mysteries.
Couldn't agree more.
We definitely encourage you, if you want to get into the nitty-gritty of the data and methods, check out the research paper itself. We've put a link in the show notes for this deep dive.
Definitely worth a read if you're technically inclined.
So what stands out to you from our discussion today? What questions has this sparked? We'd really love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.